You're listening to The Walking Dead Underground. Now your hosts, Cynic, Igri, and Ryan.
And you're listening to The Walking Dead Underground podcast, and I'm your host, Cynic. And joining me, as always, my co-host, via remote location, trapped together inside of a trailer at Sanctuary, IGN Ryan. On this week's show, you've waited months, you've prayed to the Walking Dead gods nightly, and they have answered, as we get the honor and pleasure of reviewing the season premiere entitled Mercy. Because we are the Walking Dead Underground, and at least for now, half of this podcast belongs to Negan. Like, listen, subscribe. Most importantly, enjoy the show. We open the episode with preparations being made at Hilltop. And can I say for a second that I love the fact that Hilltop has a blacksmith? I mean, they've earned the right to call themselves a colony by simply having a blacksmith. But I digress. The leadership of the coalition forces are speaking to their troops. Rick tells them that the bigger world is theirs by right, and they will end their enemies. And they shouldn't celebrate it, nor should they be ashamed either. There's only one person who has to die, and I will kill him myself. I will. IG, can you imagine the tremendous amount of pressure that Rick's in? I mean, if this goes wrong, it's not like he picked the wrong restaurant and the night is screwed up. If he chooses wrong or makes a wrong step, everyone he knows could die.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. And, you know, a lot of times in this episode, he keeps saying it's not about me. But, you know, at this moment, it seems a lot about him. It really seems like, you know, you threatened my child and you drug me around in an RV and made me do all kinds of goofy shit and carry your bat around. And now I'm going to kill you for it. And everybody else has to follow my plan so I can get revenge on you. It's a little convoluted, and it seems maybe he ought to listen to those around him a little bit more. Maybe. I mean, they're all kind of on board with his plan, but that's the thing. They're almost always on board with whatever plan Rick comes up with, whether it's good or not.
Ryan, are we seeing the return of the cocksure, guns ablazing sheriff that we all knew pre-Negan?
Yes and no. I think he's gaining his confidence back, but I don't think he'll ever be the person he was pre-Negan. I think he's developed, and hopefully he's a smarter, more capable person after that. So I think that, you know, he's somebody who's dealt with a lot of trauma and has gotten to the point where he's pushing himself to fight past it, and he's not letting the trauma carry or hold him down. But, you know, I don't think he'll ever be the same character he was pre-Negan. I don't think that's possible.
Well, I'm hoping he's not the same guy as pre-Negan. You see some flashes, and I think some of that's just who Rick is. Just with how he carries himself and how he does some of his things. However, some of the things pre-Negan where he would basically go into momentary frenzies of batshit crazy, hopefully that's not as in-depth as it was in the past, and hopefully not everything is carried out through passion, and there's some thoughts and some things. So I think we get a little more sure of himself, a little more ready to do what needs to be done, but hopefully not as crazy as, let's say, season 4 Rick, because season 4 Rick had some absolute crazy in him.
Yeah, when he was wandering around Crazy Town, it's pretty unsettling that you're going to follow him anywhere. Although, I think we all secretly wanted Rick to be a little more like Shane and Shane to be a little more like Rick. And we saw flashes of Shane throughout this episode. We saw flashes of Shane through from everybody throughout this episode, including Morgan. I mean, these guys are done playing around. They're going to do what it takes to kind of get even in this fight. The King states any person who sheds blood with him will be his brother and his sister, and Shiva agrees. IG, are we still slightly overlooking that this dude has a fucking tagger just casually hanging out? And I mean, how long would it take you to get used to it?
I'm not sure I could ever get used to it. I mean, everybody's there so comfortable, and there's literally an 800-pound tiger just hanging out in the back of a pickup truck. I mean, is the world so crazy that tiger being there is just, that's fine. Everything's fine. We're all fine here. How are you? That's just really strange. And I love it, by the way. I mean, don't get me wrong. That tiger being there really ties some things together. I like it a lot. But, man, we're in a strange, strange world when you can just have a tiger and it's okay. And nobody's like peeing themselves every moment the tiger looks their way.
Maggie tells them that they are all ready, and this may not end today. Faith in each other will see them through the uncertainty. And when they do that, the future is theirs. The world is theirs. Ryan, are you picking up what these three are putting down? I mean, were you ready at this point to go grab a gun and fight that bat-wielding psychopath in his vastly superior numbers?
I was not I didn't buy into Rick or Maggie's part of it, but I totally bought into Ezekiel. I don't know why. I don't know if it's the character he's playing. I don't know if that, you know, we're in on the joke, kind of. Like, we know that he's playing a character, that he doesn't believe it, but he's doing it for, like, a greater purpose. So I really bought Ezekiel. I don't know, maybe it was the passion he said it with, but for whatever reason, I was kind of stuck listening to it. Kind of my feelings were kind of, as Maggie and as Rick spoke, was kind of like, I know I'm supposed to feel something. I know this is supposed to motivate me and want me to go to war for them, but I just wasn't feeling it. So yeah, I wasn't ready to go to war for them, you know, based just on the speeches. I don't know, it just didn't hit me the right way. But like I said, Ezekiel totally hit me the right way.
He's their absolute Tony Robbins, right? He does. The other people just don't need to talk. Like, they can set up all the plans. They can have everything set up how it needs to go, and they can organize. But when they need someone to get the troops fired up, let Ezekiel do it. He's got that shit mastered. He's the Tony Robbins. He's the motivational speaker that can get you to do whatever he wants you to do.
I think it's just a case of both of your inner D&D players are showing and, you know, you're ready to roll for initiative and see where you end up in the battle scheme.
I'm going to roll an 18.
You can't pick what you roll. That goes against the whole premise of D&D. It's supposed to be randomized.
I rolled the 18.
It didn't. I didn't see it. It went off the table. Listen, I liked Rick's speech. And I thought Ezekiel was a little over the top, and I thought Maggie did a very adequate job. I wasn't as ready to go and fight after she spoke, but it fell somewhere under a mother reminding you to get your lunch and Xena warrior princess. So I was happy with that. I thought she did a really good first job, like motivating the troops and getting ready for them to go. I mean, listen, Hilltop isn't exactly an elite force of fighters anyway, so I don't think she needs to be as strong as Ezekiel. I think she just needs to reassure them that, you know, we're all going to be okay. So Daryl launches a crossbow bolt into Dwight's tire, letting him know that tomorrow is the day. Dwight sees the letter, responds, and fires one back, letting Daryl know that he's a dick and now owes him a new tire. IG, did Daryl and Dwight take lawn darts to a whole new level? I mean, this game of crossbow messenger, and is there a chance that they just became friends?
There's a big chance they just became best friends. The problem is email is down and text messaging is broken, so you got to get your messages quickly to each other somehow. I guess aeromail is the new message, and it's working, right? It's kind of sneaky. It's quiet. Gets the message over there. I mean, how are you going to send up smoke signals, Morse code? Which are their options? So it worked, and it was initially jarring. I'm like, what the hell is that? What's going on? And then message for you, sir. You know, sending messages by arrow. I dug it a little bit. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, but at the same time, you being a motorcyclist yourself, if you throw a tire, you can just run down to the corner store and get another one. Something tells me they're not so readily available in this situation. I mean, did you have to hit the dude's tire? Could you not hit the walker in front of him, which there's thousands of, like, at your disposal, but you had to do it in your tire? It was a bit of a dick move by Daryl.
Well, you know, not Daryl has kind of messed with Daryl enough times. Dwight has caused enough problems for Daryl that, you know, I could see where Daryl would be using him for what he needs, but still wants to screw with him every chance he gets. So that does still make a little bit of sense. Although, I mean, I do wonder, I mean, better than 90% of the world's population is gone. There's got to be car dealerships, motorcycle dealerships and everything all around. And all they keep driving lately are these worthless pieces of junk and pedophile vans. So it is a little strange.
Ryan, during the episode, we see Rick in several different cutscenes. Old Rick, crying Rick, mourning Rick at Abe and Glenn's graves. I mean, flash forward, flashback. Are they teasing everyone's fear that this all might be Rick having a dream in a coma? What were you feeling during those scenes?
Confusion, really. And I don't want to sound like I'm too down on the episode because I'm not. But though there were a couple of points that were just confusing. Like, you know, sometimes the show gets a little too artsy for its own good, where it's like, I see where I think they're trying to go, but it's not quite hitting the mark. And so I don't know if that's what is happening with the kind of flashback, flash forward, those scenes, or if there's something that we're going to find out later on. And then even with the old Rick, like, why has he aged 20 years, but Michonne hasn't aged much, and Judith has aged, you know, maybe she's aged 5 years. Like, it's just really confusing. Like, I don't, you know, is it a dream sequence? You know, I would like to think that it's setting something up that where we'll understand it later. And I hope that's it, and that it's not just them trying to be artsy and it just completely not hitting the mark.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest problems with the episode is, like, they didn't have any context why those flash forward, flashback, dream sequence, whatever they are, had to do with anything. They didn't fit in anything that was happening in the episode. They weren't set in the areas that they were dealing with. They just didn't have anything. It basically just showed that Carl, Rick, Judith, and Michonne were still together and there were other people around, but there was nothing. I mean, normally the show has some context if they're showing you some other time frame, and they normally do it very well, but this is probably something to jar us intentionally, but that's my one biggest thing about this episode that bothered me, was that particularly. I just couldn't get around it, because I'm like, what are they trying to show me here? What are they trying to do with this?
It seems like whenever they do this, they're kind of stepping out of their element a little bit, and I wish that they would go ahead and call Vince Gilligan from Breaking Bad, because that was one show that did the cryptic flashback or flash forward scenes very, very well. You know, at the beginning of a Breaking Bad episode, you're kind of looking around like, what the hell did they just do here? The one that sticks to mind specifically is the half-burnt stuffed animal floating around in Walter pool. And then, you know, as the episode came to pass, they explained it a little more and more. And I like shows that are able to do that and pull it off. This just left me with more questions, and it was a nice way to tie into episode one. And I'm going to get in to how the tie-ins a little more as we go further into the episode, because there was a lot of, you know, I guess callbacks or Easter eggs in the episode that maybe some people didn't catch. I didn't understand it, and It almost looked like past, future, and present, but I didn't quite understand it, and I hope they do a better job of explaining it and not just letting it go by the wayside. The unlikely duo of Tara and Carol look like they're monitoring a very massive herd of walkers. IG, are we seeing a large step forward in the progression of the survivors, as the herd used to mean death like it did on Herschel's farm, and now it's sort of a manageable situation in the right context?
Well, and that's some things that they've gotten better at as time goes along. They learn the tendencies of walkers. You hit them with either heat or noise or a combination of the two, and they tend to gravitate toward that. So it's finding the right herd or the right size herd and moving them like cattle. And I like how they're doing that. I'm not sure they could have, you know, used better characters, I guess, to do it. I'm still not sold on Tara. She's an all right actress. She does a decent job in what they ask her to do, but I just still don't care enough about her. She just seems too hot-headed and impulsive and problem-causing than a lot of the other characters. And she just doesn't bring out the feels in me yet. And hopefully they find a way to make that change this year, because so far she's just not doing it for me. But I do like that they've learned the tendencies and aren't as afraid of the walkers as, you know, even two seasons ago, they were still a huge problem. And now it just seems like, all right, guide them to the left.
Ryan, you're on a road trip. Who would you rather be in a car with, Tara or Carol?
That's a good question. Probably Tara. Sounds like she probably have more interesting conversation. Carol will probably be a little dour and sarcastic, and I don't know. Probably Tara, if I had to choose.
Ooh.
I didn't say who's a better character, but if I'm on a car trip,
like I said, this being episode 100, and it's hard to believe that there's been 100 of these. We got to look at a lot of flashbacks and callbacks, and the super savvy fan base, as soon as they released this clip, sequenced up this scene and the scene of Rick showing up at the gas station in the very first episode. So they're running Carl and Rick together, and it's almost like a scene by scene reshoot. Ryan, did you see that video pre the show? And what's your opinion of the viewer base becoming so damn intelligent? I mean, sometimes even more so than the writers.
Yeah, I would never have noticed that. I did see the pre-scene video of it, and when they were synced up together, and it's really cool. And I mean, with any series, whether it's Walking Dead or Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones or Star Wars, you're going to have, like, you know, your different levels of people who are engaged with it. And you will have the crazies who know every detail so well that they can pick up on things. I'm always amazed that people can pick up on even the smallest detail. They'll look at one frame that was on for, you know, one shot of like one frame of one shot that was on for half a second, and they'll, you know, they can pick out just the craziest things. So I thought it was really, really cool, A, that they included it, you know, because that's another thing. It's always cool to see the creators and how they do include those Easter eggs. So I think it's really cool, you know, to include the Easter egg, and also great that people are able to find it, you know, and within minutes, it seems, sync things up and have it out there on the internet for people to consume.
It really is a good point, right, IG? I mean, because no sooner did Kirkman utter the fact that there's going to be a crossover, and people pretty much had it figured out what's going to happen next. Now, whether they let that happen or not, I mean, it's the only logical conclusion. Does it surprise you when the fans outperform the show or outthink the show?
It used to. It really did. But as Ryan tends to call you and I crazies, it just... it kind of makes sense that, you know, they are leading a very linear path. Right. So some of the things are going to make sense to some of these people, because the one thing they do real well is they tell good stories. And sometimes to tell good stories, you need to get people comfortable. And it's one of the things, like Star Wars just did it with The Force Awakens, is they made it very comfortable and very easy to access through a lot of the similarities to Episode 4. So it really is smart, and it makes a lot of sense to do those things where you make things comfortable so that you can progress a story. And that's exactly what they did by putting in not just one, but very many relooks at the same shot, now with Carl instead of Rick, among other things. They did it a few other times in the episode too. And I did love it. I loved it completely. And I thought, you know, paying homage back to the very beginning is so important. Understanding where you came from and why it works is just super, super cool.
And did you guys see, there was a thing posted today that the girl in the background, the girl from the very first episode is as an adult now in the background of this episode, where Rick is like Rick standing and she's in the frame behind him.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up, and I thought he was seeing that, but it looks like she was actually kind of there, because he pulls his axe and starts walking to her as they do the cutscene. Yeah, it's our little friend Addie Miller is now like a full grown adult 8 years later, and there's no more bunny slippers. I had read that she had to go through 5 hours of makeup for that 3 second scene that she was in. I mean, talk about a lot of build up for nothing. I mean, they could have at least showed her a little closer up if they were going to do it. What do you think, IG?
I don't know. I think it's completely worth it. Especially, you know, she got a little shot in the very first episode, episode 100. They, even if it's 5 hours of makeup, you got to come back. You know, even if they just gave her some screen credit and no actual money, it's still worth it. I mean, to be a part of this franchise in any way is just very cool. And knowing how big it's become, it's even cooler when they ask you to come back years apart. So I think it was worth it. I mean, yeah, it would have been nice to get a little more time with her or something, a little closer shot, but it was still pretty awesome.
Yeah, one of the things that confused me about the episode was the whole sequence at the gas station when we'll call him the Traveler. I think he's going to have a much bigger name and a much bigger part. I think they've kind of lined him up with a possible big character further down in the storyline. IG, did you agree with Rick for chasing the stranger off, or was Carl right? Sometimes hope isn't enough.
You know, I don't think I have to pick either side, because I think both have a point. You know, it's like at this point, you don't know who to trust, but at the same time, you have to trust somebody. You have to, your group isn't big enough. Even if you take all three communities, you're not big enough to deal with the saviors as you are. So you're going to have to do some things. You're going to have to find those loners out there and pull them in. So not having the trust of somebody that's just out there, at least to give them a minor shot to, you know, you don't necessarily trust everything he says or does, but you can kind of watch him and see what's happening. It seemed very quick on Rick's decision making, especially since the guy didn't seem to pose an immediate threat. He wasn't standing there with a weapon. He wasn't standing there like menacingly looking at Carl, like, I'm going to get you now or anything. He was just there.
Ryan, you being a New Yorker, you've had your run-ins with some crazies, I'm sure. I mean, the guy was hungry and he was hit with a microwave. Do you give him half a second to talk before you start firing over his head?
So I think I'm mixed on this. I think Rick is correct to not bring him into the group. At this stage, it's kind of like they're going to war and everybody's vulnerable. So, you know, on the off chance that he is kind of planted, it makes sense not to bring in anybody else, kind of like to be isolationist until they defeat Negan. But at the same time, like, they could have talked to him for a second. They could have given him some food. They could have explained, you know, explained why they can't help him, or given him some kind of explanation. So I think that they were maybe a little too harsh, or Rick was a little too harsh in his reaction. But at the same time, like I said, I understand that at this stage, while hope is important and they need to build a community and embrace people, you know, they're going to war and they need to be as, you know, they need everything they can, and they need to be as secure and safe as they can when going to this war.
Well, speaking of hope, we see line by line Rick's to-do list being scratched off as the Savior's defenses are being kind of peeled away like an onion, just being snuffed out. Ryan, were you surprised at the efficiency and the knowledge of Team Rick's strike force? And do you think at this point maybe they stand a chance?
Well, I was impressed by, I was definitely impressed by the plan and how sophisticated it was, and that it did utilize explosives, the walkers, you know, the force that they have, because they're still outnumbered by Negan. So it was a smart move to really kind of take out the head and just kind of a shock and awe type of a plan. You know, it's obviously it's kind of plot armor that this plan worked out so well, and they had the little bit of tension where Morgan had to kill the walker. But I was impressed by how it worked out, because my thought going into this season is, how are they going to battle the Saviors? The numbers are not in their favor, and also when it was clear that it was going to happen in this episode, or at least the first battle, then I was really kind of thinking, how are they going to make this work? It just doesn't. They don't have the numbers. But again, the plan was sophisticated. It wasn't convoluted enough for me to, I was able to suspend disbelief, enough, it wasn't so convoluted that it took me out of it. Like, it made sense. They took advantage of the herd. They needed a lot of things to go in their way. But I think it was a good plan, and it worked well. And again, I wasn't taken out of it.
Rick says goodbye to his family, and Michonne informs Carl it's his show now. He's in charge of the defenses. IG, at this point, do you trust Carl's judgment? I mean, is he ready to be in charge?
I don't know. I think that's more along the lines of, dad's going somewhere and it's like, you're in charge now, son. You're the man of the house. You know, it's kind of make him feel important, but kind of still watch over him and don't let him make any rash decisions. I trust him, but just a little bit. Like, he's still capable of doing some absolute crazy things. What I think Carl is turning into is a couple seasons ago, Rick, where he's got that fire in him that could go the wrong way and blow everybody up around him. I trust him, but I think Michonne being there and being a little Jiminy Cricket on his shoulder kind of helps a little bit.
Yeah, sort of like she's sitting Carl on her lap and she's letting him steer the car, but he's not actually driving it, that type of thing. You know, like, you're in charge, but I'm going to watch everything you do. I mean, and they leave him in charge, and the first thing he does is go feed the crazy guy at the gas station, and walk over and leave him a little love note like, hey, sorry, man, by the way, you can probably follow me back to our town. Ryan, we get a quick look at Rosita, just in her always sunny disposition, hanging out on the porch, just glaring at everybody, mean mugging. I mean, do you think she was left back to defend? Do you think she was left back because she was injured? Or do you think she was left back because they all feel that she's a loose cannon and batshit crazy?
I think probably that she's injured. I think her being a loose cannon and batshit crazy might help in this situation. I mean, assuming that she can at least stick to the plan, when it comes to shooting, he's firing shots at Negan and the Saviors. The fact is she is an explosives expert, and there were explosives being used. So you would think they could use her in the field on some level. So I don't think it was her hotheadedness. I think it was just the injury. Maybe that, at least from the perspective of a viewer, she's a leader. So keep her in, keep her there in Alexandria to interact with the few other people that are left there. Maybe that's, kind of a writing reason why. But yeah, I think it was more, again, that she's hurt, and so she shouldn't be in the field.
For those of the people listening at home, Ryan not only used air quotes when he said explosive expert, but his eyes rolled to the back of his head for about 15 to 20 seconds, and he had to tap the back of his head for them to roll back out. In the Alex Hill King assembly area, we learn a few things about the communities. Like, they're all wearing different colored armbands to identify each other. As smart as this seems, Ryan, do you think this tactic could be used later by the Saviors against the good guys?
you wonder what was the reason. Is it like a visual cue for the, like, what was the reason for the writers to do it? Like, is it a visual cue for the viewers that, like, we needed it? Like, I don't think we did. Or maybe it is. Maybe if it does, you know, you'd think, okay, it helps the saviors identify them, but it also helps them identify each other in, you know, in a situation where there's just utter chaos and there, you know, people shooting each other. So I don't know. You'd think maybe just everybody wear the same color. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite sure. It didn't make all that much sense, but I'm not going to hold it against them.
Well, they were doing in that scene the thing where they're like, well, we don't all know each other, and they're high-fiving, but yeah, but we're here for each other. Jerry's nicely telling Edith to put some armor on before she goes out inside and play, you know, like sort of like you better put a helmet on before you get on your bike. I mean, they were doing their best to make it look like they're all just getting acquainted. Yeah, I agree. Maybe all the same color would have been a better idea. How hard would it be for somebody from the other side to grab an armband and just be like, yeah, I'm one of you guys? I think that could be problematic. IG, we learned a few things in the staging area. Apparently, you can wage war up into the second trimester. Rick's plan is to follow Maggie once the war is over. Can you imagine a situation where Rick isn't in charge? And I mean, is there anyone better to suited to lead than Maggie?
Well, there might be a lot of people better suited to lead than Maggie. Unfortunately, this is a show and they can't let everybody be a main character. However, we ran a poll on Twitter last night and it's kind of split right now between Rick staying leader and Maggie being leader. And I put up a third option, which was just anybody else, you know, and nobody voted for that. But I was hoping somebody would say, yeah, Ezekiel, why can't Ezekiel be everybody's leader? That would be my choice at this point. One, he runs a good ship, right? If you look at what they're doing back at the kingdom, they're really making things work. And two, he's very caring about his people. So it doesn't matter what happens. And three, he's just a great motivator. He'll get things done. So I think that there is a possible option for other leadership. But that being said, he might not want to lead everything. He might just want to just kind of main in control of the kingdom. So maybe that's why he's kind of excluded from that conversation. I don't know. I think Maggie would be fine, but I'm not sure. I mean, we have to see where the battle goes first, where this all-out war ends.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think everybody wants to wear LARPing gear all the time. I mean, I don't want to be a wizard because Ezekiel's in charge. You know, just like you probably wouldn't want to be a bard and probably sit there and play a banjo or guitar in the town tavern. I like Maggie. I think Maggie's the perfect. I mean, she's come up under Rick. She's level-headed. And she makes good decisions. She doesn't seem to have the flaws that any of the other rest of them have. I mean, I think Maggie Reeves, the person to be in charge if Rick Grimes isn't. What do you think, Ryan?
I agree. I think she's shown as a character to develop over the years into a really strong leader. So I definitely think that I think like Rick is more of a general, at least when he's in it, you know, when he's not suffering from PTSD. Like, he's a strong general and he's a strong leader, you know, at war. But I think Maggie is right to lead the community. But I do agree with Ig that Ezekiel is really shown to be a strong leader and able to run a strong society and be both like the motivator as well as the kind of executive that you need to be to lead one of these communities. So I think you can't really go wrong with either Ezekiel or Maggie as a leader.
And the tiger trusts him.
Yeah. He trusts Daryl, too. I wouldn't put a lot of stock in that. Rick and the Piss Patrol reach Sanctuary and confront Negan and his lieutenants, giving them Rick gives them all a chance to surrender. Negan plays the Gregory card, and it fails miserably. I mean, Ryan, did they think that shit was actually going to work for anybody?
Yeah, that was kind of silly. And I mean, maybe it was just to show Gregory that they wouldn't follow him. But, yeah, it was kind of silly. Like, you'd think Negan would know better than that. Like, if they're going to if they're following them, you know, to the saviors at that point, like, nobody's ditching, you know, ditching Maggie at that point.
I mean, IG, was there nobody there with a gun with a scope? I mean, we could have ended this war in about 10 seconds. They're all just standing there waiting to be shot on the landing. For showdown purposes, this made a lot of sense. I mean, to progress the show, but in actual reality, the whole leadership standing out front.
Well, even a gun with a scope, it's going to take time to get from target to the next. So you might have been able to get Negan, which is the head of the snake, but this is a many-headed snake, you know? So Simon takes over, or worse yet, Eugene takes over. None of us want to see that, you know, but they all say, I am Negan. So maybe that's not the best option, but maybe that person with the scope could at least just taken out Gregory and we could have just been done with his shenanigans forever. You know, I'm so ready for Gregory to be done.
In an episode where I expected at least one big death or maybe a few trivial deaths, probably the biggest loss was them intentionally blowing up Dale's RV to knock down the gate. IG, what were your thoughts on the Coalition's tactics, including armored cars and explosive leading walker herds?
You know, the armored cars, I mean, yeah, they were armored, but it just seemed like that real thin corrugated steel nonsense. And I'm like, that stuff isn't even remotely bulletproof. What are you hoping to do with that, except for keeping the walkers away from you? If they start shooting back, you guys are in a lot of trouble. So that bothered me from a tactical standpoint, but it looked cool. I'll admit that kind of looked cool. The explosives trained to bring the walkers in, I thought was really awesome. Covering the sanctuary in glass just because we're going to shoot all the windows rather than shooting at the people that are clearly standing there. That was strange, I guess. What was the point in blowing out all the glass? I mean, are walkers now attracted to glass?
Well, that's actually my next point is, well, maybe they caught the Saviors all barefoot. Maybe they had Dwight steal all their shoes, like Die Hard, before they started shooting at the glass, and now they're all going to walk around with hurt feet. But that goes to my next point. Ryan, going from no ammo, which now appears to be unlimited rounds as they shoot out all of the sanctuary windows, did our heroes discover some sort of a cheat code? And would the ammo be better used someplace else?
Yeah, there were a couple frustrating things. So it's like, obviously, we're on a podcast talking about a show about zombies. So, you know, it's tough to sometimes take things too seriously, but like at least be consistent. And so, yeah, it's like they went from no ammo. Now it's like it's unlimited. The other thing that bugged me is we know how slow the walkers are. How, and we see, you know, Daryl's driving on his motorcycle. So between the time what was it? At least a mile or so out between where that initial explosion was and where the Saviors are. So how fast do the walkers then travel to get to that area? Like that seemed a little weird. Like that didn't make sense that they, like, did they start running and we just didn't see that? Or is it like a Jason thing where they just walk at super fast speeds that it somehow defies physics. So that bugged me a little bit. And yeah, the unlimited ammo thing did bother me because it's like they didn't even, like, I would have been okay if they were using that ammo, but in a situation later where they just start shooting without a care in the world, like at least show some interest in saving ammo. And at this point, they didn't see it. It seemed like that's not a resource that they need to say to be careful with. And so that bothers me. At least show say something, make a comment like, oh shit, we're going through all of our ammo, something like that. Like, let me know that you're aware of it. But otherwise, it just seems like bad writing.
Well, is it possible that like all of these walkers, like the day that they were turned, were all partaking in the Atlanta Marathon? So they're all like athletic walkers. So they really, they're all running like 5 minute miles, right? You know, that's possible, right? There's a big enough horror. They're all marathon runners.
Well, they ran a few sets over and they went and got a couple 28 days walkers and they're leading the herd. As Father Gabriel's about to leave, we see a very lost-looking, I-just-got-kicked-down-the-stairs-and-the-shit-beat-out-of-me-looking Gregory just kind of meandering around looking for help. He returns, saves Gregory, and basically Gregory takes him over and takes his car and drives away, leaving him looking down, just stranded, looking down the barrel of this herd incoming. IG, would you have gone back for him? And does this prove once and for all that you and I are right and Ryan's completely wrong and nice guys do finish absolutely last?
That's the nicest thing he could have done. Like, all right, I'm going to go try and save this guy for no reason other than it's the right thing to do because I'm a priest and I'm supposed to love life and everything. So I'm going to go save this guy. And the guy's like, fuck you, finger in the air. Off he goes. I got your car. Bye, bitch. What, man? Come on. Just get in the truck with the rest of your team and leave. Gregory dug his own hole. He did it right there up on the patio with everybody else. He's up there saying, you know, I'm with Negan. The hilltop stands with Negan. Why do you want to save him? You know, come on. It was hilarious and tragic at the same time.
Yeah, I did get a good laugh out of it. I mean, I wouldn't have went back. I know you're not going back. So, Ryan, I have to ask you, are you going back for Gregory?
No, he's such a despicable character in person. And Yeah, there's no. And it serves him right. He went back and Gregory ditched him. Like, don't go back. He's awful. You know, and yeah, it's just, I knew it too. And, you know, I saw him, you know, kind of that, the look, you know, it was great, good acting too, you know, on his part. Like, kind of that moment of, shit, I got it. Like, I'm a priest, I got to do this. And, you know, and then he just ditches him. It was so comical, like in a good way. Like, I was laughing, but just at how ridiculous, like, of course he was going to leave him there. And now you're stuck and you're probably going to be tortured at the hands of Negan. So, I don't know. It's just ridiculous.
IG, I hope the Sabres have their shitting pants on because they're about to shit their pants. Do you think Sanctuary will ever be the same? I mean, it's shot up, infested by walkers. And, I mean, did you get the callback from episode one as Negan and Father Gabriel are trapped in what looks to be almost like a small satellite trailer and the walkers are just surrounded it? I mean, did you get the feeling of the tank in the first episode?
I really did. And I thought it was very cool this kind of brought it full circle. And, you know, that's the only difference, is instead of one person being trapped inside of a thing, it's two. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, ahead of the game, what Negan has planned for Father Gabriel inside of that trailer. Hopefully he doesn't just go crazy and try and hurt Gabriel, because, you know, if you're in there alone with one other guy, maybe you want to coordinate so you can both survive instead of kill him and try and take on all the walkers by yourself. Unless, I guess, maybe he's going to go the way of Terminus and try and use Father Gabriel as a food source, but that's a different thing.
Did they establish that Gabriel was out of bullets? Like, did I miss anything?
No hint of that.
So why doesn't he immediately shoot Negan?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess that would probably ruin the whole show.
Ruin the show, yeah.
And that was The Walking Dead, brought to you by AMC. Thank you very much. We'll be back next year with a new show.
One episode now. See you guys in a year. If we start tomorrow right now with everything we've beaten, and everything we've endured, and everything we've risen above, and everything we've become. If we start tomorrow right now, no matter what comes next, we've won. We've already won. Ryan, what were your thoughts on Rick's speech, the episode, and your rating?
I thought the speech at the end was a little better than in the beginning. I was a little more, I don't know, impassioned, or at least that, you know, that part was a little more impassioned. I thought the episode was good. I know I have my own nitpicky critiques, because that's what I do with a lot of these. But overall, I did like where it went. I like that, you know, after seeing them get beaten down so much last season, I like that we start off with a victory, and a big victory. You know, obviously this season is going to go back and forth, and we're going to see times where Rick has the upper hand. We'll see times where Negan and the Saviors have the upper hand. But I liked that, you know, they won a clear victory. They were smart about it. They used what they had and were able to take advantage of what they had to defeat a bigger, stronger opponent and really send the Saviors into disarray. So I did like it. You know, again, I had my nitpicks. I don't need to go over them again. There were some annoying little things that I feel like, you know, maybe it's just tough when you're doing a serialized show to get all, you know, that's got to be churned out, you know, on a weekly basis like this. And at this scale, sometimes it's tough to get all those little details, but there are some little things that I wish, you know, just kind of takes me out of it a little bit. And so I wish they kind of could correct for them. But otherwise, I thought it was a strong start to the season. I would give it, you know, solid 8.5. I think it built good tension. You know, there was just a lot to like about the episode. And again, I liked how they set up the rest of the season. So I'm excited to see what's coming up.
Yeah, I told people at work this. I mean, if you loved the finale, you're going to love the premiere. And we've waited months for this, and the hero's pushback continues. I mean, they struck a very decisive blow in this battle against Negan and the Saviors, but it wasn't a killing blow. So this is going to go on through the course of the season. So anybody running around saying, well, is Negan going to die this season? At least not in the first half, because I think this is going to last a while. The pushback continued throughout the finale into the premiere, so I'm happy about that. I was just pumped. The whole cast got screen time. Even smaller characters like Jerry and Enid and some of the non-name Hilltoppers even got a little bit of dialogue, which made me happy. The one thing I wish we would have seen was maybe a savior or two die in all this gunfire. I realize that battles are extremely expensive, but just driving out there to shoot up windows and screw stuff up and to kick in their front door, I thought maybe a little more could have been done with that opportunity. You know, some real badass badassery from Daryl, which that's what Daryl does. He does badass stuff. It's why we keep him around. I mean, driving around, blowing stuff up, leading the herd. I love the fact that Morgan and Carol were back into the fold and, you know, acting decisively. And I can't say enough about Rick's actions as he stabbed the guy, being taunted, and he just goes ahead and lets the walker eat him. I mean, I loved the episode. I can't wait to see where the rest of the season's headed. It was a very strong opening from a very strong ending last season, and I'll give the show a 9.
I really enjoyed this episode a lot. There was a lot of things going on in it, and again, a lot of movement. Most of the movement coming from our heroes. I really enjoyed it. Rick did well. Michonne didn't do much, but she's always a strong presence. Really loved everything Maggie was doing with all the people from the hilltop, including Jesus. That being said, the old man Rick stuff that happened in the episode was too much for me to just let go. It really kind of bothered me. Now, we could come back later in the season, because I'm sure they're going to do more of this old man Rick stuff, and it might completely change where I'm at on this episode. But for right now, I'm going to give it an 8. Really strong visually, a lot of fun, a lot of good stuff going on, but I just have to give it an 8. That could change, but for right now, that's where I'm at. So there it is, the season 8 premiere of The Walking Dead and the 100th episode. From the Cynic Radio Podcast, let's give it an 8.5. And that's going to do it for episode 2 of the Cynic Radio Podcast, The Walking Dead Underground. I'm your host, Igor. He with me has been my co-host, Cynic, and Ryan. We had a great time this week. We'll be back next week with a really special episode because we're going to have episode 2 covered, but we're also going to bring you some coverage from Walker Stalker in Atlanta, Georgia. If you're going to be there, send us an email. We'll meet up with you there. Have a little talk, have a little fun. You can meet the Cynic Radio Podcast and The Walking Dead Underground at Walker Stalker in Atlanta this upcoming weekend, the 27th, 28th, and 29th of October. If you have any other questions, we'd really love to hear them. Send them to us at cynicradio@gmail.com. Find us on the internet at cynicradio.com or walkingdeadunderground.com. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cynicradio or look for the fan group, Walking Dead Underground, on Facebook. It's a great group, 20,000 plus strong. There's a lot of great stuff happening there every day. And you can find us on Twitter at cynicradio. Also, head on over to tpublic.com and search for CINIK, Cynic, and you can get your very own Walking Dead Underground and Cynic Radio Podcast gear. You can get stickers, you can get posters, you can get t-shirts, sweatshirts, all of it. Great prices, great stuff. Show your love for the Cynic Radio Podcast and head on over and pick up some stuff. We'll be back next week from Walker Stalker in Atlanta. And until next time, don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and at TheWalkingDeadUnderground.com. Join us in our fight against the saviors.